Welcome to Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. Richard Lupoff has the day off. My guest is Wally Lamb, who has written two novels, the first, She's Come Undone, and his latest novel, I Know This Much Is True. Wally Lamb started out late, as he said. You were 30 years old when you first began to write?
Yeah, I was, and got my first fictional voice the day our first son was born. So fiction writing and fatherhood have always been linked for me.
Had you considered writing before that?
I had not. I had when I look back, my entry into it probably as a kid was through drawing. I drew constantly as a child, and then had been a high school teacher, English teacher, instructing writing for about 8 or 9 years before I actually invested in the process in any serious way.
You wrote short fiction until you wrote She's Come Undone, is that correct?
Right, and thought I was writing short fiction then. I had a character who I sort of fell in love and worry over and started writing her story and showed it to a mentor of mine, a writing teacher named Gladys Swan, and she said to me, well, my dear, I think there are a few too many pots on the stove here. You may be trying to tell yourself you want to write a novel. I'm not a big risk taker, so my reaction was like, I don't know how to write a novel. But she, with her encouragement, I went on with it.
Well, She's Come Undone is a very large book, and it made a big splash, particularly when Oprah Winfrey recommended it. I wonder what happens, or what happened to you. You'd written this one novel that you didn't expect to write. It becomes a success. Where do you go from there?
Well, I think, luckily for me, if this terrific thing was going to happen with the Oprah Book Club and widen my readership so dramatically, I think it was nevertheless lucky that I was deeply into the second novel when that happened. She's Come Undone was published in 1992, and so I had long since entered the biosphere of this new writing experience with the characters from the new novel. When Oprah chose the book, that was in 1997, and so I took a hiatus, got out of the biosphere for a couple of months. The one thing that happened that changed me after the show was that the phone didn't stop ringing. And prior to that, I had worked at home, I had written in my own home, and found the need as I was trying to finish this new novel. To rent a little writing apartment, unfurnished except for a table with a computer, and the chief selling point of that place is no ringing telephone.
Well, I Know This Much Is True is a very long book. It's 900 pages. Mm-hmm. It's a very readable 900 pages.
Thank you.
But it is 900 pages. Right. When you were working on it, did you have any idea that the book would become so massive, as you put it before we went on the air, a doorstop?
Right. No, I didn't. And I think had you said to me at the beginning of this process, you know, Wally, you're going to emerge from this 5.5 years having looked at the politics not only of the time in which you've lived, but also of the first half of the 20th century, and take on subjects like spirituality and oppression, I probably would have run screaming away from you and gotten into a getaway car and not opted to tackle it. But it was sort of the process kept dictating itself, and the story was something that I kept discovering. I never know where I'm going when I sit down to write, and I certainly never write with an ending in mind. So I get to worrying about characters that I've created, and much in the same way that you read a good book to find out what's going to keep happening. That's what writing is like for me. I'm in the dark all the way.
So you don't do any outline of any kind?
No, I kind of wish that I was the kind of writer who could work that way, because I think it would be a more efficient way to write. She's Come Undone took about 8.5 years to write, and this one took, as I said, about 5.5. But yeah, for me, that's the carrot before the horse, me being the horse, as to, you know, what is going to happen to these people.
Well, of course, in a book of this length, particularly a book that deals with the intimate details of one family, mm-hmm. you cover a lot of very crucial and interesting issues. I guess I'll start with the main one, which is you have two twins. The book is told in the first person of one twin, Dominic. His brother Thomas is a paranoid schizophrenic mm-hmm. who apparently went off the deep end at the age of 19 and progressively got worse. What brought you to write about twins and to write about a paranoid schizophrenic?
Well, again, it was all a matter of discovery. When I started this book, and it was difficult starting, and after I had just come back from a book tour with She's Come Undone, so it's September of 1992, and I have a book contract, I have a leave of absence from teaching, I sit down to write a second novel, I couldn't think of a damn thing, and this goes on for about a couple, 3 weeks, I'm getting more and more panic-stricken, and finally, one morning, the muse or whomever or whatever smiled on me, and I got a picture in my head. It was like a moving picture. It was maybe a minute's worth of a movie, and what I saw was a guy behind the wheel of a pickup truck riding down a rural road in Connecticut in the middle of the night because he can't sleep. And so I began asking myself questions. You know, what's this guy's deal? Why can't he sleep? What's woken him up? Who does he love? Who or what does he hate? What are his issues? And the story gathered itself. And about me, I had almost immediately Dominic's despair and his anger, but I didn't have the source or sources of that. I was about maybe, if I remember correctly, another couple, 3 weeks into that when I discovered this brotherhood. I don't have brothers of my own. I always wanted one when I was a kid. So I don't know if it comes out of that need or whatever. But I started writing this brother who almost immediately became, you know, I saw his troubled behavior, and he had mental illness of some kind. But I didn't. That was as far as I had gotten. I grew up in Norwich, Connecticut, in the eastern side of Connecticut, and on the periphery of our town loomed the largest of the state hospitals for the mentally ill.
The ones you call Hatch and Settle.
Right, yeah. And so they were always sort of mysterious and ominous to me when I was a kid. And so in the course of writing Dominic and Thomas, I had Thomas's eccentric behavior, and I called up and asked, in this age of deinstitutionalization, the Norwich State Hospital had been closing down building by building. I think they were down to two buildings left, and I was able to get a tour. And while I was on tour, I approached a psychiatrist who was there and who I had met, and I said, "Hey, if a guy is acting this way and that way and the other way, and he's doing this kind of thing and that thing, what would be a likely diagnosis?" And he scratched his head and said, "Sounds like paranoid schizophrenia." And so now I had a diagnosis for Thomas. It was incumbent on me to go out and learn as much as I could, not only with books, but also talking to people, family members of schizophrenics themselves.
A great deal of the book takes place in dialogue form between Dominic and Dr. Patel, the Indian shrink. And I found it interesting that you made her Indian because she doesn't quite understand all the references. I'm thinking particularly of the reference to Jackie Gleason, to the
right.
Moon Alice.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, she was a fun character to write. She's a good old soul, I believe. And also that's a nod to the fact that although I didn't have any kind of outline or any sense of where I was going, what I did have clutched in my hand all through the writing of this book was a Hindu myth, an ancient myth that I found in a volume by Heinrich Zimmer. Called The King and the Corpse. And that myth was sort of like an imp for me. It sort of kept whispering things about how to go. This is a very puzzling novel for me to write because it came to me in these little puzzle pieces that I wrestled with. You know, what's the big picture here? What's the meaning of the whole thing? So I made the psychologist Indian born. And also made her an anthropologist. I have her with an anthropology degree as well as a degree in psychology. And she starts out working with Thomas, the ill twin, and then works with the angry twin as well. And she is treating him not only with commonly held psychological practice, but also with myth.
The book starts out with a bang. Thomas chops off his hand in protest of the Persian Gulf War. Did that image just spring to you full-blown, or did that come from the myth?
Both, but probably from another source as well. It was the That was the strongest of the reference points. I think I mentioned that I have been a high school English teacher for many years, and for the last 10 or so years that I was at that school, ran a writing center, and I was working with a history class. We were interviewing people. We were doing an oral history project, and we were interviewing people who had been teenagers during the Great Depression. So I put an ad in the newspaper inviting people to come in and tell their stories to the young folks that I was working with. We had a big turnout, and it was to be a two-day project. In the first day, the group was just going to share their stories in a sort of a free form way. And then in the second day, there was going to be one-to-one discussion with each of the students. Well, the folks came in and they were telling their stories, just as we had planned. And then finally, the last gentleman had not spoken yet, and he had worn dark glasses and, had his hands crooked into his armpits for the whole thing. So I invited him. High school, of course, works on a bell schedule, and we were running out of time. I invited him to share his story, at which point he took off his glasses and revealed that he had a missing eye and also uncrooked those hands, and his hand was missing as well, his left hand. And he began to tell the story of his life, how he had followed a biblical dictate during the World War II era, and he made these personal sacrifices, as he called them, as a pacifistic gesture. Now, what happened was that all the kids that I was working with were spooked by this guy. I had planned just to facilitate and pour coffee and play host, but none of the kids wanted to work one-to-one with him. They were too frightened. So he became my interview subject, and I talked to him for 2 or 3 days, and he had a fascinating story. I didn't end up writing his story, but it was his act, his dramatic act, that was actually private. It was not a public, and that was not his diagnosis, paranoid schizophrenia. But that, I think, was one of the main ways into it.
I'm Richard Walensky. I'm talking with Wally Lamb, whose novel is I Know This Much Is True. Dominic has an extraordinary amount of anger. Mm-hmm. I guess on some level, Wally Lamb must too, because it comes out.
Well, yeah, Dolores Price in the first novel is she's sort of anger and implosive. Dominic is explosive. I'm not carrying around an unreasonable amount of anger myself that I know of anyway. I've had a conventional life. I've not had the trauma that Dominic and Thomas have gone through. But I've dealt for a lot of years with a lot of kids who have, and when you invite students to write what matters to them, often what matters most to them, what they take up for subject matter, is themselves. And so I've seen a lot of damage. I've seen a lot of kids and been on the receiving end of a lot of angry voices. I'm not saying that there aren't shards of Dominic in me. We're different. It's not a one-to-one correlation.
Well, it feels as if you sit yourself right in him. I mean, that comes through very strongly in the book.
Well, you know, I've never acted. I've never had any kind of acting experience, but I've talked to a lot of actors. I know actors, and I've certainly read about technique and so forth. And oddly enough, I have maybe once or twice a year that actor's nightmare where you're supposed to be in a play, and you were to have memorized your lines and so forth, and it's the night of the performance. And why I have that dream, I don't know. But I think the impulse when I sit down to write, and I almost always write first person, is the invitation to sort of crawl out of my own skin and inhabit somebody else's life. And I tell you, Richard, that in both cases, my whopping experience of having written two novels, I'm changed at the end of that journey or that experience. I know things. I understand things. By having lived, in both cases for several years in this alternate life. And so it sort of expands me.
Well, I know a number of authors. I've asked them, generally off off mic because it's a fairly peculiar question. It's happened to me when I've started writing, which is that sometimes as I'm writing, my life begins to imitate or follow in the path of what I'm writing about.
Right.
Did that happen to you?
Yeah. One of the things that happens in this novel is that Dominic begins to question where he is in terms of spirituality. He's had a lot of trauma in his life, not only in connection with his brother, but the woman who he has married and still loves has left him. They have had a child die of crib death, and so a lot of that's also the source of his anger. Parallel to the writing of this novel, we had a lot of tragedy, a lot of challenge in our lives. My family and I had a brother-in-law who was accidentally killed. I had a student who I was very close to who died of leukemia, and I was sort of in the working with him and his family through that. Another couple of students were struck and killed in a car accident, and so there was a lot of this, you know, pondering, you know, the why of tragedy. Also happening in the course of writing this novel is that my wife and I decided to first of all take into our home and then eventually adopt a little boy whose parents were both severely afflicted alcoholics. And that had challenges attached to it too. We have two other children, and so there were all these things happening. And one of the things that I was questioning along the way, as I was sort of in this alternate life, having this writing several hours a day as somebody else, was the nature and the purpose of tragedy, and you know, if there is a God, then and that being is merciful, then why is there so much suffering? And that found its way. It leached into the storyline itself and became also part of Dominic's questioning.
About two-thirds of the way through, or maybe a little later than that, you completely shift gears. First off, did you know when you were writing the book and talking about the diary or the autobiography of Dominic's grandfather, that would find a place into the book? In other words, would it come back? And the second question is, did you have any fears that you would lose the reader at that point?
Well, first of all, the way that a reader is going to read the book from page 1 to page 800 and something is not the way the book got written. And when I said before that I write in these islands of story and put the puzzle pieces together, I had the grandfather's story very early on. In some ways, it's really puzzling to me. I don't at all understand the creative process, and why I sat down to write in the voice of this Sicilian grandfather of the twins who dies before they're even born. I'm not sure how I got started on that, but once I was started writing in that voice, that was the part of the novel, oddly enough, that came not easiest for me, but came certainly in a rush. I didn't do a whole lot of revising. I'm usually obsessive about that. Writing is painstaking for me, but that part almost was guiding me. And I'd written about 100 pages in longhand of the grandfather's story, pretty much the thing whole, very early on in the process. I was bringing my kids down to a basketball camp, and in the next town over, and I basically had to hang around and wait for them for 3 hours for the camp to be over so I could drive them home. And so I arranged to sit in a school library that was locked up for the summer, and that's where the grandfather's story came out. And that became, for me, the beating heart of the entire novel. I didn't know what the story meant or how the two connected, the storyline proper, the narrative of Dominic and his brother, and the grandfather's story. But that I always, through that long process of writing the book, I had the grandfather's story. I knew I was going to get back to it.
Well, one of the reviews criticized you, a review of this book criticized you, and I understand their point, having mm-hmm. read that, mm-hmm. for throwing in a touch of magic realism.
Uh-huh.
Now, one could easily argue that it really isn't there, that the individual could have been just as easily lying because it's told very much as a story to Domenico, the father.
Right,
the grandfather.
And, in terms of critical reaction to the book, I think that's all fair game. I think once the book is put between hard covers and you declare this is finished and it goes out there, people are certainly welcome to have their own reactions. I just know that story, the grandfather's story, is crucial to the story of Dominic and Thomas and could not have lived without it, or could not have been without it. And the magic realism is just something that I saw happening, and there's a sort of a truth to the hallucination that you're having at the time you're writing this. My writing comes to me very cinematically. I see it happening. I sometimes hear the dialogue, I do feel comfortable with the interface of those two styles. And as far as taking a risk, I learned very early on to sort of try to have any sense of audience not participate in the process, to ask them to wait until the process is over and then let the book find its audience.
So you basically can really still those critical voices inside of you.
I think I can, and I don't think I can at the very beginning of the process, but for me, writing a novel is a step-by-step immersion, and once I'm deeply immersed into the dream, say, I'll stay there and not be too troubled by the reaction to it.
I'm Richard Walensky. I'm talking with Wally Lamb, whose latest novel is I Know This Much Is True. There are several other elements, some of which we've touched on, such as the process of mourning and grief. There's a tremendous amount of tragedy in the book. There's also a lot of humor. A lot of it is gallows humor, but it's humor nevertheless. When you were constructing Dominic in your mind, how much of that was there? How much of the humor was actually there?
That's probably if there is a connection between Dominic and me, that's probably the source of it, because much of life is sad and unpredictable in terrible ways, and yet humor is one way to deal with it, to cope. And so Dominic uses that gallows humor, that sort of cynical, sort of in some ways self-mocking and humor that's sort of based in pain. But it helps him survive. As I was attempting to complete this novel at the end of last year, at the beginning of this year, my mom had a really serious stroke, and it took away her ability to speak and to swallow and to walk, turned the tables on my parents' marriage. Suddenly, my father, who had been taken care of for 55 years, was the caregiver. And when I would go down to visit them, that my father, still through all this, has the ability to crack jokes. I'll tell my mother something funny that my kids have done or pulled or said, and she can still laugh. Humor is a way of dealing with life, and I think that certainly finds itself in the pages.
There are other subcurrents here in I Know This Much Is True, your new book. One of which is the sexuality of the individuals. And I know that you kind of answer the question, but I'm not sure if you do. Mm-hmm. If Thomas had not been abused by his father, Ray, would he have wound up gay?
I don't know. I don't think I have an answer for that because, what you're basically asking about is nature nurture.
Right.
And I certainly don't have the answers to that. It's one of the questions that I had all the way through the novel. But I think that remains a mystery in terms of schizophrenia itself. And one of the things that was fascinating to me is the whole theme of wholeness versus separation. Identical twins start out as a single being and then for some reason, split in half and go off and have two separate lives. And so that whole thing of two sides of the same was very much on my mind. I wrote She's Come Undone from the point of view of a woman. And I grew up with older sisters and girl cousins down the street and so forth. And so I never really was that focused on how guys and women are that dramatically different. And I think maybe being a high school teacher, that can't be that much of your focus because you have to relate with everybody. When the book was published and I started going out to bookstores, that seemed to be everybody's focus. You know, why did you choose to write that? And, how could that be so authentic and so forth? And so when I started this book, sexuality and, male and female roles and the way we are as men as opposed to the way women are as women, that was very much on my mind. And so, one of the conclusions that I remember coming to is that whereas Dolores tends to eat her secrets and her pain goes inward in a more female way, Dominic explodes. Now the other side of that wholeness and separation thing that really took my interest was the fact that we are, as much as the culture seems to suggest that men are from one planet and women are from another and never the twain shall meet, we are in fact the product of male and female, our mothers and our fathers. And so one of the things I was looking at is the two-sidedness of that. And it just happened the way I fleshed it out was that Dominic was the more male oriented, male centered of the twins, and Thomas the more female.
I once interviewed a San Francisco mystery author named Joe Gores, who said, "You can't write a book that's honest and be politically correct at the same time." And judging from your book, I would guess you would agree with that.
I guess so. I think you're dead in the water if you're writing fiction to teach somebody something. I think the fiction process, at least for me anyway, I can only speak for myself, it teaches me things. So I come out of the experience understanding things that I hadn't. But I don't write with a polemic in mind. And I think in some ways you have to give yourself the freedom to be politically incorrect to a certain extent if you are living lives that are going to reflect reality, realistic fiction.
This book has come out. It's huge. You've been working on it for 5.5 years. Have you begun your next?
Well, I'm in the middle, as we speak, I'm in the middle of a 22-city book tour. And so I've sort of declared for myself a fairly lengthy recovery period of about 3 months. However, the shower is always a creative place for me, and I don't know where I was, Minneapolis or Chicago or someplace last week, and I went out for a long run early morning in the city, and I came back and I jumped into the hotel shower, and a couple of characters started whispering to me, and so they're there, they're ready.
You've been listening to an interview with Wally Lam, whose latest novel is I Know This Much Is True. I'm Richard Walensky on Cover to Cover.